I want to say a very special birthday to Eileen McDevitt in Lifford, who is celebrating her 104th birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Eileen, from all of us here at Highland Radio and all of our listeners, of course, but particularly from your niece, Joni, in Letterkenny. Eileen McDevitt in Lifford, 104 today. Okay, let's move on to Wellness Wednesday, and we're going to talk to Richmond Stace, author of The Pain Coach, Understanding and Overcoming Your Chronic Pain. Richard, thank you. Richmond, thank you so much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, no, good to be here.
Right, okay, so can you differentiate pain, chronic pain for us? Because, you know, I don't think people who don't suffer with chronic pain may not understand, you know, exactly what it is or how it might impact on someone. So how would you define chronic pain?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And actually, some people don't like to be have that term applied to them, chronic, because it sort of has different meanings for different people. Textbook-wise, it's sort of 3-month mark, but that's not really the go, because it's not like you go from 2 months and X number of days and then suddenly at midnight you become chronic. It's much more complex than that, and it's much more to do with the person and their life and their life to date, and perhaps a particular condition or circumstances. But essentially, you know, we're talking about pain that persists. And that's a term that's used more and more these days, actually, is persistent pain rather than chronic pain. It's one of a number of sticky problems we have as humans.
And it's how it responds to painkillers. Is that influences whether or not it would be called persistent or chronic pain?
Yeah, I mean, there are different. There's a whole gamut of different drugs that are used at different stages, if you like. So, you know, morphine, for example, will be classically used with an acute pain if it's something that's very traumatic and very painful, like, you know, post-operative or after some kind of, you know, serious injury, that sort of thing. And then you've got the much sort of lower level ones like your paracetamols, then you've got your anti-inflammatories. But if someone's experiencing more ongoing pain and it's deemed to be perhaps more to do with the nervous system, which doesn't work in isolation to other systems, by the way. And this is part of the problem, this sort of fragmentation of all these different bits rather than seeing the whole. But with more sort of neuropathic pain that relates to the nerve function, you've got your kind of gabapentins and pregabalins. So there's these sort of different drugs that are used.
And pads, a lot of people might use patches long-term as well for certain types of pain and what have you. So, like, how does... Do you believe there are people out there now with chronic pain or persistent pain and they don't see that in and of itself as a thing, if you know what I mean? Like, I wonder, I mean, you're going to be aware of pain if you have it, right? But I mean, just do we need to understand it a little bit more and maybe if we can understand it, try and manage and overcome it rather than enduring it?
Yeah, oh, definitely. It's interesting you say that because, you know, I don't think many people realise that point. There are a lot of people out there who... you know, they're just kind of getting on. And you sort of say, well, you know, how are you? You know, I'm all right. You know, I get headaches every day, but I'm okay. Or this hurts every day or stops me from doing things. But they don't deem themselves to have, you know, chronic pain. And maybe there's pluses to that because actually they're getting on in the best way they can. But obviously the downsides of that is they don't perhaps realize the many, many things they can do to help. Because still the predominant way of going about pain is very biomedical. And this is a real problem. You know, focusing on the bit that hurts rather than the person and their life. So it's a very limited model, which sort of relies upon sort of seeking some kind of source anatomically or structurally as cause of pain. But we've moved on from that enormously. And in fact, the thinking of that started back in the 60s. So a lot of this stuff is not that new. Yeah, there's so much that people can do.
Yeah, but because it's such a broad church, it could be post-operative, it could be nerve damage, it could be, you know, lower back pain, it could be following a fall or a road traffic collision, and it persists, you know what I mean? It can be acquired or it can just come on you. As you as the pro in relation to this, I'll allow you to walk us through that and the different types of pain and the approaches and how we might manage it would vary from person to person.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on there. It is a broad church and there's, you know, you're going to have people with particular conditions which could be classically painful, you know, rheumatoid arthritis, for example, you know, an autoimmune condition. But even, you know, with that or with arthritis, so the more common, the osteoarthritis, which you know largely we're all going to get at some point. But the kind of the misunderstandings around just focusing on the bit that hurts, and just doing things to that part. And so fundamentally, when people realize that that bit that hurts, so it could be your back, let's say, you know, those tissues of the back, they don't have the ability to generate any kind of pain experience or any kind of experience, conscious experience at all. You know, that's as best we know it, generated by the ensemble of body systems that we have. So the nervous system, immune system, endocrine system in particular, kind of working a bit like an orchestra, you know, generating a piece of music. And that's the same for all of our perceptions. But I think because with a more acute situation where someone might have just sprained their ankle or whacked their head on the corner of the cupboard, you know, the relationship between that kind of pain that you might expect to feel and what's going on in the body tissues can be a little better, but it's still not a one for one. You know, we don't experience our body or the world directly. We just experience our body system's generation of an experience of that. And so kind of getting our heads around that is tricky. Because it doesn't feel like that. You know, it feels like here's the world and here I am. So what on earth is this guy going on about saying that it's a representation as such? But this is what we know now. There's a classic example that's often brought out of the builder who had a large nail go through his foot. Have you come across that one?
I've had a nail go through my foot. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with your builder, but I've on a building site. I have stood on a nail. It wasn't very pleasant, but anyway.
No, not at all. But so when you took your shoe off, or were you able to take your shoe off? What happened?
I think I pulled out immediately and had just a hole in the bottom of my foot.
Yeah, so you had a hole in your foot, and I'd imagine that I mean, you said it was pretty unpleasant. I'd imagine it was pretty painful.
It was not. I would the no. I think the whole notion of it was perhaps was more overriding than the actual pain, because it was very identifiable, and you know what I mean. No, I don't. The pain was there, but I think the actual whole notion of stepping on a nail and it puncturing a shoe and what have you was perhaps what stuck with me.
Yeah, I mean that sort of illustrates beautifully the different dimensions of the whole experience. It wasn't that painful for you. For someone else, it could be agony. And for this guy, you know, he was taken off to emergency accident emergency and was, you know, was in agony, you know, sweat and white and you know, all the rest of it, as you would expect if you had a nail going through your foot. But what they usually do, I mean, you pulled it out. You're a brave man. But they would X-ray just to see, you know, well, what's happened here so that we can remove things and deal with it skillfully. And so when they did that, they discovered that the nail had not actually gone through any part of his foot. It had gone between his toes. But yet, because his perception was that nail had gone through his foot, he exhibited all the signs and had the genuine experience. And that pain is real. And that is generated by our body systems.
Right, so we're getting, I feel like we're getting to a point here when we're not denying people's pain, obviously, because it's
No,
real.
it's always real.
But that being said, that we maybe can try and learn to cope with the pain, as well as obviously treat it, you know, as you would anything. Is that really what we should be trying to do? And if so, is there any skills that can be self-taught in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, going back to what you said before about, you know, understanding pain and what it is key, because if you believe that your pain is related to, you know, your body tissues and the damage and injury, then quite quickly you can be going down the wrong path, because often people have scans and investigations. It doesn't necessarily reveal anything, but they've still got pain. Yeah, think about fibromyalgia and conditions or back pain even. And common things that people experience, there's not any great findings sort of scientifically. So the data and what you can see, that's objective. But the person's experience, you know, that's the thing that's not really taken into account with the biomedical model, because it's all about finding some structure or pathology to explain it.
Okay.
And so if the person is constantly seeking that, well, actually, they're going down the wrong path, because it's more within our physiology that's generating our experiences that we need to target. And that opens up a whole range of opportunities to improve one's life. And from wherever your start point, whatever's going on, you can always improve your life and your health in different ways.
So, but can you with your state of mind as well? Because I'm thinking, you know, I've had spells, they come and go, as anyone with anxiety, I think it would be acute anxiety, crippling anxiety I've had over the years. It comes and it goes. You wouldn't know it probably from being around me, because you internalize that and just try and deal with it yourself. But you're able to, when you're going through severe bouts of it, particularly if you focus on your health, manifest pain. Your arm can become sore. You can get tingles in your fingers if you believe that that's going to be harmful for you. Your headaches, you know what I'm on about, pains in joints. I've had all of this, right, because I feared whatever. But to some extent, I don't know how, but my body, my mind was able to manifest these physical things within myself, right? Yeah. These pains, these sensations, blurred vision, because I thought, well, what if I get blurred vision? What would that do to me? And next thing, what happens 10 seconds later? Blurred vision. Do you know that sort of a way? Are we in the same sort of a space, but you're looking at it more in a positive way, if you know what I mean, about how we manage pain?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, these are things that happen. You're telling your lived experience. That's what it's like for you. And as a clinician or someone who helps professionally, you know, we have to listen to that, because that's what it's like for you. And what we're trying to shape in practical ways is, well, how can you update that? How can you make things better? And when you understand some of the mechanisms behind it, you know, how our systems are generating these experiences, say it opens up the opportunities, you know, those moments when you're feeling those, you know, those symptoms, if they're within at such a level, then you're able to start using different skills to meet that, to create some calm, to create some space to look at, well, what's actually happening for me here? Yes, that's very real, what's happening, but I know it's not permanent. I know that can change, because things are changing all the time. So there's certain insights that are really important, you know, truisms of life, such as things are always changing. You know, we use phrases like, oh, it's the same, or I've gone backwards. Well, nothing's ever the same, because things are always changing. But what you put your focus on largely governs how you feel. So if you're, you know, if you've got some sort of thought, oh, what, am I going to get pain in my arm? And then you're really focusing on that. Do your body systems have the ability to generate a pain experience in your arm? Absolutely. Does it mean there's something wrong in your arm, something wrong with the tissues? No, because pain's about you as a whole, not just about your arm. I mean, even if you injured your arm and had arm pain and that persisted, it's still about you as a whole in your lived world. So it's not a different model. The model still explains both of those situations.
Like just in one listener's experience, I can't wear clothes at times in the morning because of the pain in my body. I'm on painkillers. That does help to some extent. But for someone like that there, or even through the purchase of your book, Understand and Overcome Your Chronic Pain, is there any advice for someone in that position that they can, or any techniques or methods they can employ?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's difficult to give specific advice.
Understood
without,
that. You know, full, I understand fully, yeah.
Full story. That, you know, that's hard. You know, when the body becomes that sensitive that even the idea of or thought of putting clothes on, you know, brings that sort of feeling. But that's, you know, that's something that's become learned. It's a way that the body systems are trying to protect that person. So it's looking at creating some new patterns. You know, what happens in the morning, you know, on those kinds of mornings, what kinds of thoughts, what kinds of states am I in? Can I create something else? Can I create a morning routine, for example, which eases my sensitivity? So that might be through the use of some simple breathing and some simple moving. And I know that some people go, oh, yeah, but that surely that's not enough to change a sort of a neuropathic type pain or some sort of complex pain or such like. No, because none of these things on their own, it's about the bigger picture of having that deeper understanding of what's going on. How is it that my systems keep predicting these experiences that I'm having, and how can I change that? How can I update, you know, what's going on by deepening my learning and creating new patterns and new habits in what I'm doing? And having a, you know, a real clarity in where I'm trying to go with this. You know, this, the eye, because, you know, sort of sticky beliefs, limiting beliefs from what people have been
told. Well, we're conditioned, are we not? We are conditioned to focus on the point of pain, aren't we?
Yeah, and it's hard not to, isn't it? If you're in a, you mentioned anxiety, you know, if you're feeling it, you're feeling it. But it's the key thing is in how you relate to it. That's because that's the skill. What's happening is already happening. If you're in pain, if you're feeling anxious, it's already there. There's nothing you can do about what's already there. But how you relate to it, okay, what's going on for me here? And then creating that little bit of space But those skills we can learn when we're feeling better, so that then when things are trickier, we can then bring it in. I mean, a bit like, you know, think about the emergency services or in the military, for example, you know, you learn to do okay. things at a sort of a simple level, and then the pressure builds so you can bring those skills in. It's that kind of thing.
All right. I'm sure many people listening have sort of want to get on your vibe train, so to speak, and they can do so through your book. And I think, you know, in terms of me asking questions, I'm popping in at different points of a journey, and I get that, right? So people might want to get the book. It's Understanding and Overcoming Your Chronic Pain. It is available now from the pain coach Richmond Stace. And how do people get their hands on that book, I wonder, Richmond?
You can go to Amazon, and if you put my name in, it'll come up.
All right.
So yeah, easy.
It's
to
been
find.
An interesting conversation. Thank you for your time. I do appreciate it, Richmond Stace there. And I know that's it's not going to be for everyone, that, but it might resonate with some, and even may help. A caller says, I'm afraid with all the technology these weather stations have, they can't even get the weather right, maybe 12 hours ahead. Raining all night, still going good, supposed to be good Wednesday on, but not now. Very disappointed, a lot of people's grass cut ready for winter fodder, and now they'll have to wait. Well, I don't know where you get your weather forecast. I find them quite reliable because they did suggest as far back as last Saturday and Sunday that, and they're only suggestions, they're forecasts, they're not stating facts, that high pressure would move in from the west a little bit. Now, I think I did see some articles where it said summer U-turn, a glorious sunshine and hot temperatures to arrive in Ireland. And, you know, that's a journalist with no, or a person who's writing an article with no meteorological background at all. There was nothing to suggest all of a sudden there was going to be this return of the summer and all that kind of stuff. But the weather has been predicted for quite some time now that there'll be less rain tomorrow, Friday, and into the weekend, less rain. Now, second to that too, the one thing I'm astonished at is the difference in weather in our own region. You know, it can be piddling down in Strabane. It can be chilly and windy in Letterkenny, and lovely and calm and sunny in Bundoran. So I think we have to take the weather with a pinch of salt as well. But I'm starting to find that they are getting reasonably good at predicting a tone of weather, maybe not the specifics, if you know what I mean.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by local enterprise office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the local enterprise office team to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Okay, Wednesdays means the latest edition of Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast is available for you to stream. And its presenter is Chris Ashmore. He's in studio with me now. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us. Okay, let's get to some news. Community Finance Ireland, what work are they continuing with at the moment?
Yes, just interesting to note, during the week, Community Finance Ireland, now they provide funding for sports clubs, community projects, voluntary organisations, and they have just released a report. And essentially what they're saying is that for every euro that they loan out to these organisations, the real value of it is around €3.70 when it all sort of filters through. So it's a good return. And just by way of a local example, down in Portneau, funds from Community Finance Ireland were used by the Dolman Leisure Centre there to establish a new thatching school at the Dolman Centre. So this thatching school's providing training in thatching. So there'll be master thatchers there. And this is great that they're going to be able to pass on their skills and knowledge, because that could be a trade that could have been lost.
Well, for sure. And you know, at the moment, there are some who are looking for this kind of work to be done that are having to take people in from other parts of Europe to do it and house them up locally because of the shortage of skilled people able to do that here. And I mean, obviously it's about employment and all that kind of stuff, but I think better access to these experts helps preserve our heritage and culture. Because if you can't get someone to thatch your house, what are you going to do? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And we've lost an awful lot of our thatched buildings and homes. And we don't want to. They're very important. They were all over our landscape in the past. And
And I know Joseph Geller is, you know, different parts of the country, there's different styles of thatching there as well. And, you know, it's important that you're going to keep what's relevant to Donegal, because, you know, at the end of the day, we might get a thatched roof from somebody in Kerry, but it's not keeping in line with what we have up here. So, exactly. You know, so that's very encouraging to see.
There's still time for nominations to the Letterkenny Chamber Business Awards.
That's right. They've been extended to next Monday at 5 o'clock. So you can go onto the Letterkenny Chamber website, see all the different categories there. And if you feel there's somebody worthy of a nomination, the whole process is pretty straightforward.
All right. Applications for the Ambitions Programme are open.
Yeah, we mentioned this before. This is for geared towards female entrepreneurs. It's essentially to help them develop businesses and to attract investment and create jobs, and run through the local enterprise office. It's award winning, and they're actually having an open evening. It's going to be online on Wednesday, the 17th of July at 7 o'clock. So go to the local enterprise and you can click and make your reservation for that.
Donegal Women in Business Network approaching a milestone.
Yes, they are having their 25th birthday party celebrations to mark a quarter of a century of the network. And on the 19th of September in Loch Ness Castle in Donegal Town, they're having a big event. And the special guest will be Sonia Lennon, a renowned designer, businesswoman, speaker and social entrepreneur. And there'll be a rich lineup of speakers there. So well worth getting involved. Contact the Women's Network. And they have an early bird offer, €45 for a limited time for tickets on that one.
Now, thousands of people, homes, businesses, agricultural outfits around the county still awaiting access to fibre broadband, but progress is continuing and some now have access.
Yeah, now we're not hearing quite as much about this, which is probably a good thing, because more and more people are getting connected. The latest area under the National Broadband Plan to get access to fibre broadband, Fannad, essentially this is around Tamney, Massmount, Legboy and Rosnakill, and about 1,800 premises, including farms, will have the opportunity to come online. So basically, if you check it out with National Broadband Ireland, put in your air code, you can find when they're coming to you. And also a number of other areas in the near future will be getting access. 1,000 premises near Ballyshannon, almost 2,000 near Buncrana, and 3,000 more near Carndonagh.
Okay, we'll wait with bated breath. Now, after a couple of institutions left the Irish banking stroke mortgage market, you know, the field narrowed considerably. But of course, we've had some enter the market, not least the credit union. And Revolut now. A lot of people out there with their Revolut card. Revolut have seen a gap in the market here, it seems.
Yes, now Revolut has been a huge success across Europe, and indeed in Ireland it has really taken off as well. They've had a 95% rise in revenues last year, and here in Ireland they are now going to start offering mortgages in the Irish market. And as you probably know, Greg, you know, there's quite a lot of people who, particularly younger people, who've maybe never even been into a bank. Mm-hmm. Everything is done through Revolut, and it has really taken off. And the range of services that they're offering seems to be expanding all the time.
Car
ultimately,
insurance,
yeah,
loans.
You can buy stocks on it, mm-hmm. and it's real competition for the banks, which is good, because as you've touched on there, if you've more competition in the mortgage market and you shop around, well, hopefully you're going to get a better deal.
All right, we shall see what they offer. And the future is here, Chris.
Yeah, I put this in because I thought you'd be interested in this one. I don't know if you've seen it already, but there's a company called Wing. It's a drone delivery company. Now, they're owned by Google's parent company, which is called Alphabet, and they're going to start delivering medical supplies to two private hospitals in Dublin, the Blackrock Clinic and St. Vincent's Private Hospital. And this delivery service will see various supplies ranging from surgical tools to heart valve repair products. They're going to be coming by drone. Who knows? We could see it here in Letterkenny. The new service, they're going to have 100 weekly flights. This is the shape of things to come.
It is. Amazon already in this space. Pizza delivery, maybe not necessarily as much
and
in Ireland.
But
it's happening.
Yeah, it is. So We're going to see more activity in the skies.
I know. It's, as I say, the future is here. Okay, let's talk about this week's Business Matters podcast then.
Yeah, now, as we all know, festivals have a big spin-off for local areas. And here in Donegal, the Mary from Dunloe International Arts Festival, and now in its 57th year, which is quite something in itself, it's the biggest of its kind in the county. And this week, you know, there's certainly a business aspect to things, because they've two events in particular that have a big spin-off for local businesses. Coming up, we'll hear about from committee member Pat Conahan about a food and drink fair. But first, Pat Nora Gallagher, a co-director and a man who's synonymous with the Mary from Dunloe Festival down through the years. He was interested in setting up a day that would show the emergency services down by the shore with demonstrations and, you know, giving value to the fact that people, you know, we owe so much to the emergency services. They do a great job. So an air sea rescue type demonstration. But then, you know, as he delved into things a little bit, he found that they're looking for staff. So they said, well, we can use this as an occasion maybe to recruit and get the word out there. And then it began to take off, and now it's going to be, we're going to have this nice display, but also there are going to be public and private companies there, and it's going to be like a mini careers chance. And as Pat explains as well, of course, a lot of people are home in Dunloe from abroad and may not even be thinking of relocating here, but there are so many opportunities at the moment.
We're going to go with the emergency service display event, an open day for recruitment for all the services, both voluntary and professional, and we have them coming there at the shorefront.
And it's going to be called the Day by the Bay, Live Life Work in Donegal. There's a lot more here than meets the eye.
Well, indeed there is, and that's the nice thing about it. It's just we want people in our county to know, first of all, what emergency services are available and what they're all about. And out of that, we had the request that can they also avail of the day, avail of the opportunity to do recruitment. And when that sprung out, there was a number of local and countywide professional companies and also support elements who wanted to come on board and promote employment in County Donegal.
Very interesting, Chris.
Yeah, and the Donegal ETB, ATU Letterkenny, or ATU Letterkenny and Donegal, the County Council, there's going to be lots of people there. And he mentions in the programme about Donegal County Council recently had a jobs fair in London. And again, you know, this is an opportunity. And just to stress, you know, there are a lot of job vacancies at the moment and people are recruiting.
Yeah, but there's not an awful lot of houses.
No.
Which is a challenge for people coming back. But there are some availability and there are options and helps there as well. You were also chatting to Pat Conahan?
Yes, Festival Committee member Pat Conahan. Now, they had a great event last year with on the streets of Dunloe. It was a food event and a real international flavour to things, and it's sort of evolved from that. And they're going to have the Dunloe Food and Drink Fair, so this will have a huge variety of local produce. Many people are aware of the Food Coast Donegal and all the people who have come on board with that. There's going to be award-winning chefs. There's going to be demonstrations taking place in the Waterfront Hotel on Monday, the 29th of July. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for local producers to get exposure, and hopefully in turn this will lead to more business for them. It's a fiver in and there'll be all sorts of food and drink and certainly an expanding sector here in the county.
Yeah, and I think everybody likes a food fair or a drink, and that's the reason we decided to go with food and drink fair. I wasn't aware like how diverse it's become, even in our own county now. Like, you know, things like the kombucha is such a big thing at the moment. Coffee's become such a big thing. You know, we have the Crawley Distillery, we have Errigal Brewing. Like, it's not just all about food anymore, that there's such a variety in our own county. I sat down with a friend of mine who, Benji Conway, he was is an award-winning chef who is now a development chef with Cisco, and he knows it from both ends. And we sat down and said, is this a practical something that we could run for the day? And he said, definitely. And that's how we decided we were going to run it quite small, and then we decided when Food Coast Donegal came on board, we decided it was obvious we needed a larger area, so we went to the waterfront. And we also approached Declan Kelly from Donegal Shores, because obviously we need kitchens as well. So we have five different chefs coming from four different restaurants.
Okay, so much more from Pat Nora and Pat Conaghan. Just, I suppose, to show different strings to the bow of the Married from Dunloe Festival, and good to see it being leveraged to, you know, promote jobs, promote our food and drink and what have you. As I say, much more, Chris, on the podcast. That's available on our website right now, highlandradio.com, in the Listen Back section, and it's broadcast to at the weekend.
That's right, after the 6 o'clock.
After
news.
The Donegal game,
after
probably.
After the Donegal game. Case. And the email address, if you want to contact me in relation to the programme, businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
All right, Chris, thanks so much for that, as always. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you, Greg.
Okay, check out the website, highlandradio.com. It's there for you right now.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by local enterprise office Donegal. If you have an idea to start or grow your business within Donegal, contact the local enterprise office team to find out more about the supports available for businesses. See localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
The 9 till noon show is brought to you by Letterkenny Credit Union, with monster loans available up to €60,000 for all occasions. Visit letterkennycu.ie.
Good morning. I was wondering if anyone could possibly clear up a question for me. What are the rules regarding cyclists not using a cycle lane or a cycle path? Surely, when a safe area is provided at a very reasonable, sorry, at a very considerable cost for a person to use or travel on a bicycle, that it only right and proper that they use the lane provided instead of impeding traffic on a very busy road. I use the example of the new layout at the Port Road. Thanks for taking the time to read this, and I hope someone can answer my question. Well, I can. Because we've covered this quite a bit. And whilst it's there, there's no compulsion for them to use it, unfortunately for you, I'm afraid. Same with scooters. Don't have to use that cycle lane either. They can scoot up the road at 25 kilometres per hour. Greg, I forgot to tell you that I took your advice a few weeks ago and shopped around, and I got my car insurance almost €300 cheaper than my previous company. Quote for my renewal, Mary. Yes, well done. €300 in your pocket. Nice one. Well done. Stuff it to the companies. Brilliant. Mairead, sorry, you're there now. Good morning.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I am good. And you're another person listening to and trying to digest the former Attorney General's advice to government as it relates to the defective concrete block scheme. What's your take on it and what you've learned and listened?
Yeah, well, last night was a big surprise to read it. We have been going through this process for over 3 years now, and recently it emerged that we didn't qualify for any remedial option. So this was a big surprise after such conflict and advice throughout the whole three-year process and things like that. And then when I read that, the piece that was released last night, it just makes you start to wonder, is this part of it? You know, are they holding back from giving this remedial option because of this advice that they were given and things like that?
Well, can you try and explain that to us a little bit more? Because I understand that obviously there was a visual determination. An engineer, did they say you had mica or actually tested for mica? Because you did get refunded for your engineer fees. So from the engineer's perspective, was there any bores taken or was it a visual determination? Or how were you precluded from any options, I wonder?
The whole thing doesn't make sense to us either. So basically 3 years ago, June 21, we were about to do up kind of a few bits around the house and things like that. And before we went at it, mica was pretty prevalent in the news and had come up, and I was reading a lot about it. And when we had purchased the house, it had been newly painted and things, but we had one gable that continuously would flake and things like that. And we were advised that it was probably plastered during the frost and things like that. But we thought before we went and did any work within the house that we should just get a visual inspection in case before we started to put money into it. So that summer, we had a local engineer come visit, a registered engineer, who at that time said, based on a visual inspection, that we were riddled with mica. Mm-hmm. And it was a big shock at the time. You know, we really didn't think that was going to be the outcome. So that was June 21. And then in February 22, we got our cores taken, which was 8 months later. And photos were taken then as well. And then it was a couple of months later that we got our results. And our results were that we were 5% mica and that we were 0.25 pyrite. And the baseline for that, the recommended amount of pyrite would be 0.1%. So at that point then, there was a real lull. We were passed over to the housing authority because of the low percentage of mica for them to make a decision on it. So it took then until September 23, so over a year later, before we got kind of any contact from the housing agency or anything like that. So we received an email that confirmed that we met the damage threshold in September 23 and that an authorised officer would visit our home. Mm-hmm. So that was fine. Then we had to wait till February, and we got another email that again confirmed that we had met the damage threshold and that an architect would be in contact to make a visit. So at this point, I felt really deflated because it wasn't really the architect that we needed. It was an engineer, because since we had our visual inspection, we stopped maintaining the house, and the internal and the external cracks were really visible at this point. So I'd really hoped an engineer would have visited. So I did ring the housing agency and they confirmed that they wouldn't visit. Now, since we've received this information, we've heard that it's really mixed. Some people have had engineers visit, but in our case, we haven't. So the architects came out and they took an internal and an external measurement of the house. And then we were told we would know within 5 weeks the outcome. So we waited and waited, and we waited for the 5 weeks, and then we phoned every single week after that. And finally, by week 13, we were told that it was there. You know, the person that we regularly rang in the housing authority told us that it was there in front of them, but they couldn't disclose it. It had to be passed over to the council. So 15, 16 weeks later, in total, after being told it would be 5 weeks, we received the news then on the portal that we didn't qualify for any remedial option.
Right, okay. I'm going to have to hold you there to break this down for my benefit and the listeners. So a visual inspection from an engineer determined that you had defective concrete. Your house was bored. A clinical analysis of that material showed that you exceeded the damage threshold to be able to go on the scheme. Now, the focus there was on mica, but we know now there are many other deleterious materials that are causing these issues. So at the next point, it's an architect that comes out, measures the house, and on that basis, you're disqualified from the scheme.
And the photos are so different. There's a huge contrast in the ones that were taken years ago to the way the house is now. You know, and we don't want to be going through this process. We have young children. We aren't looking for anything, you know, the way it was implied yesterday or last night, that people are looking for to do remedial work and things to do extra with their home. Nobody wants to be in this position, you know, if you can avoid it. So there was a part of us that were a bit excited, thinking, oh, do we not qualify for it? Are we okay? And things like that. But there's no justification. Had an actual engineer come and studied the cracks and told us, you know, did a proper visual inspection, you'd have that comfort, but nothing adds up. You know, the fact that no engineer came, there doesn't seem to be any sense that they've come and analysed the cracks and actually given proper feedback.
What was the reason given for you not qualifying for the scheme?
They are going off types of cracks. Again, I can't remember which one.
You don't have to get technical on it.
I wish I had it here in front of me.
No, I understand.
But again, what they're using, they make a lot of reference to photographic evidence, you know, but it's not what they saw themselves. It was a registered architect in Sligo.
But your test results show you've got deleterious materials and your house is cracking inside and out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why reference old photos when the evidence, the most recent evidence, trumps the photos?
I know. So we have 90 days now to appeal. We are probably a month in that, because we parked it there for the past month because nothing made sense. We're kind of getting back to it now, and last night kind of got us to really think again about what we have to submit now for the appeals process. We've 60 days to appeal, where you can't submit any photographic evidence. And if I'm right, there's actually, you're submitting something that's not going anywhere. There's nothing set up yet for it to be reviewed.
So the former Attorney General was afraid that people like you might get on the scheme and that might make others get on the scheme. I mean, it would only be human. We don't know how much of that advice was taken by government, right? I accept that. But you'd be only human to think that you and your family, your lovely young family in your forever home, which is falling down now, effectively, well, it's in the process of getting to that point, that you are being frustrated off the scheme to discourage others from trying to even get on the scheme. That's what, if the Attorney General's advice was taken, as we've read, appears to be happening. That must be very difficult with everything that you're processing to try and process that new information now, Mairead.
We just realise that there are so many others in worse situations. You know, we totally realise that. But you just feel so sorry for anybody that is about to begin that process. If it is anything like the process we've gone through, they definitely are trying to put people off. And if it was a logical process, then you would be happy with the option that was given. But you're left with just, it just doesn't make sense. Anything, the whole process, you know, saying that we met the threshold, then to tell us that we haven't based on photographs, and there's just no logic behind it all.
And, like, what do you do if your appeal is not successful? I mean, do you start painting cracks or filling cracks and painting over it, pretending it's not there? Like,
I can imagine there's a part of you that wants to do that just to move on, you know, to just leave it behind. But it's the fact that if it comes back on you again and you're doing the same, you're investing the same money again, and or even just that you had someone to come out to look at it so you feel confident to go ahead and do remedial work.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have that.
Yeah, but the test results show that certainly on what they were testing for, and listen, you know, that there's an updated standard that needs to be applied here, not the old mica one. But, you know, like, that showed that you were above the damage threshold to qualify for the scheme, and that was subsequently downgraded to you're not.
And they have stated that so many times in emails that we've met the threshold then, like, we never thought this was going to be the option.
Right.
That there'd be no option.
No option at all. Right, okay. Because by the sounds of things, the obvious option would be full demolition, because the blocks are deteriorating inside and outside.
Yeah, and nobody does. Deep down, nobody wants to go through that, you know, at this point.
Let alone try and screw the system. You know what I mean? We're not trying to screw a system here. We're just trying to get, you know, and I'm sure you're heavily invested financially and emotionally into this house as well. You know, it's terrible. Mairead, listen, we'll make inquiries and see what the story is, but it's I haven't heard this one before. You know, when there are so many different stories affecting people in different ways, it's horrendous. Mairead, thank you for your time. That's Mairead there. I mean, can you imagine what that must be like? So this afternoon, some drier and perhaps sunnier spells are possible. Feeling a little cool, however, temperatures 12 to 17 degrees. Michael Kelly is Chief Executive of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland, and he joins us now. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners. It's great to be here.
All right. Now, the radio sector lobbying to ensure new car models still have radios. This amid fears the sector could be inadvertently sidelined due to car manufacturers replacing the old humble wireless with direct online access. Tell us more.
Yeah, we want to make sure that radio continues to be at the fingertips and on the dashboards of every car. And the reason for that is that radio is by far the most convenient, the most reliable, the safest, and of course has no cost at all to the consumer. So we want to make sure it stays there. So because we're in a bit of a David and Goliath contest with the major streaming giants and all of those people, what we've done is we've banded together with all of the other commercial radio stations in Europe, and we're making a big push to argue that radio must be kept in cars, and it's absolutely vital for consumers.
Personally speaking, and I'm not a young pup, and I suppose really we're not just talking about you know, people of a certain generation that's used to a radio, but the new generation. With the way FM frequency works in my car, I tend actually to use I listen to the radio digitally, you know, through TuneIn or the station's website or whatever. Do we not kind of have to accept that people are going to consume media in a different way and maybe try and promote that rather than trying to hold on to, fantastic but out-of-date technology?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to say, we as a sector have faced a lot of disruption in the last few years, and we're well able for it. And we've actually launched, and I know that Some people already use it in Donegal. There's an app called Radio Player that we have marketed. It makes all of the local radio stations in Ireland available at your fingertips. Mm. I know I've used it when I'm abroad on holidays, and it's a fabulous app. But we do also say that, and I know everybody knows this, if you drive from Letterkenny to Glenties, how many times will the signal drop off in your car? Mm. How many times will the internet not work? So the big thing about FM radio is it operates everywhere. It's at your fingertips. There's no cost. You don't have to accept cookies. You don't have to get involved in any fiddly stuff. And I suppose the other big thing is it's far safer. There's been studies done that have shown that if any of us are using our mobile phone, even hands-free, which I know we do for safety reasons, that's actually really distracting and causes us to suffer more accidents. Whereas if I'm listening to the radio, it's on in the background. I'm getting the music, the chat, the information, the companionship, but it's without distracting me, and yeah, I can continue keeping my eyes on the road.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. But I also think there's an onus enough to ensure that our product is so strong that we're found out in that. I don't know anyone with a radio in their house. It's all smart speakers, and lots of people access us that way. But I also recognise what you're saying as it relates to, you know, access to a signal that allows you to stream on the platforms. And of course, this has an impact on listenership as well. The JNLR figures count people listening in their cars as well. So it is the most convenient way to keep people engaged with the great positives of the service that you've outlined.
Absolutely. And just to say, we're only looking for a level playing field. We're not asking that people wouldn't choose to download digitally if that suits them. We just want to have them to have the option of taking our service. We believe it's really important. And I suppose the thing about Ireland is we have a much greater liking for radio in Ireland than any other country in Europe. And of course, in Donegal, that's even higher. So what we want to make sure is that people have that availability. We think it's in the motor manufacturer's interests to serve their consumers. Yep. And if the consumers are using radio, we can keep the radio in the car.
No, I would agree with that indeed. You want people to have that option. All right, listen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it, Michael. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Michael Kelly there, who is Chief Executive of the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland. Have a lovely Wednesday, everybody. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 9.